Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I'm excited to be talking with Laura Costantino. Laura is a senior content designer and strategist working on AI and large language models at Google. For the past 10 years, they have worked at the intersection of UX, content, and marketing for some of the world's largest tech companies. Laura developed a passion for storytelling early on and received an MA in Cinema Studies in San Francisco, where they worked as a curator for a range of film festivals and cultural institutions around the Bay Area. Outside of work, Laura is committed to mentoring people transitioning into UX and tech, advocating for content, and sharing advice on LinkedIn. They currently live in New York City, were born in Southern Italy, and speak both English and Italian fluently. Welcome, Laura.
Hello, happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us. And you want to talk about stories.
Yeah, and I just realized as you read the bio I gave you, and this is pure coincidence, that I have quite a focus on that in my bio even. So I guess it's pretty front and center when I think about like myself.
This was meant to be.
Yeah.
Where do stories come in for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, this goes back to my childhood, actually. And I think my love for stories has really just like blossomed super early on. I grew up, like my bio says, in the south of Italy, surrounded by family, not just my parents, not just nuclear family, but extended family. I was very close to my paternal grandmother and my aunt. And really, I think my love for stories come from especially my father's side of the family. My father would tell me stories when I was little, not really read me books, but just more tell me like folk stories from my own culture. Some of them were like humorous, funny. Some of them were kind of like stories with a moral at the end. And, you know, some of them I like barely remember. But as a little kid, and I was very, very little, like we're talking, you know, before like elementary school. So of course my memories are fuzzy, but I would get sick a lot. I would get ear infections and, you know, like little kids do. And so I would have trouble sleeping at night when I was sick. And so my dad would like come and tell me these stories. For me, it was like very, very soothing and comforting. And I think some of my love for stories comes from that. My dad still tells a lot of stories. He loves telling stories, remind us of family stories, that he's really at this point like the only one who is, you know, has kind of collected them and kept them in his mind. And we've actually even been thinking, I don't know if it will ever happen, me kind of like helping him maybe put them down in writing, because we think like with, you know, eventually when he will pass, like some of these stories will get lost. But then also like I would hear stories from my grandmother, and these were more stories from her youth. My grandmother, you know, I grew up in the south of Italy. Of course, the country went to fascism and World War II, and in particular, the south of Italy has kind of like Italy at some point was like divided, and, you know, the Americans and the British came to the south of Italy and, you know, fought against like the Germans and the fascists, who had kind of like retracted into more like the north of Italy. So different stories. My grandma didn't live what we call in Italy the resistance, which is what happened more in the north, where people were guerrilla fighting. But she still had a lot of stories of growing up during fascism, what that meant. And, you know, it's interesting because it's stuff that, of course, like I studied in school growing up, but, you know, I also heard firsthand some of these like stories, not from the perspective of the big events, you know, the war, the you know, political, the political events, but really the stories of the people and what would happen, what it meant to shelter during when there was like bombing alarms. There were no bombings where I'm from, but, you know, there was still like alarms and what it meant to have the Americans and the British come. And so, you know, of course, it was like really, really fascinating stories. And like I said, this was when I was quite little, like elementary school, even before elementary school. And then my aunt, so my dad's sister, was a classics teacher. And so from her, I actually heard the stories of like literature and classic literature and, you know, the Odyssey and the Iliad and a lot of like the ancient Greek literature, but told, you know, in, and again, that this was not reading from a book ever, right? Like it was always like my family recounting these stories that were either part of, you know, one or another tradition or part of their own personal tradition in a way that was kind of like adapted to a child and therefore like really compelling and entertaining to an extent. And like I said, also very, very comforting. And to me, it meant dreaming of different worlds and experiencing things I would have never experienced otherwise.
That's fascinating because your childhood revolves around these sort of like three centers of storytelling or stories where you have your father, you have, I'm assuming, folk stories, fables, those kind of things that teach a lesson or teach a moral on how to, you know, how to be a person in the world. And then you have stories from your grandmother, which give you a glimpse into a history of your family and the world and your family within it. And then you have your aunt who brings in the classics. None of these things are actually, as you said, were you were reading them by yourself. These are all stories that you heard through those people. How is that affecting your interests?
Yeah, I think, you know, now in retrospect, so many years later, I can say it had a huge influence in terms of what I, in terms even of the, you know, my studies, the subjects I enjoyed the most in school. I was always like really good in literature, of course, for me growing up in Italy was Italian literature. And also because I grew up in Italy in high school, we still study Latin and ancient Greek. And so a love for stories, but also a love for languages. And I kind of carry that over throughout my studies. I think also, though, as we're talking about oral storytelling, I think some of that translated in different forms of storytellings. And I actually quite young started getting like really, really wanting to go to the theater to see live performances. And I grew up in a small city in the south of Italy. There was like one theater that had, you know, the regular kind of like season. And I remember always begging my aunt, the one I mentioned, or my parents to bring me to the theater. And so, like I said, I think like my love for stories that started translating into a love for performance, a love for theater, and not so much in me doing the performance, but in me being the spectator and, you know, and listening and experiencing it and watching it. And then that kind of even translated from theater, my love moved more toward film. And that's what I studied in college and also got like my master in film studies. And again, for me, the interest in the stories wasn't necessarily so much creating them, to be honest. It was a lot more experiencing them. And it was really truly kind of like a passion that was never attached to like, I really want to become a filmmaker, or I need to make, you know, write my own plays or write my own books. Because that puts like pressure to some, you know, some pressure, I think, on something that, like, at least for me, like, that I truly love. And so for me, I've always enjoyed more, again, like, being the spectator and experiencing it. And of course, eventually studying it. And, you know, my master is in film studies. And so what was interesting to me was, like, analyzing the movies and, you know, theories around the, like, movie making and things like that.
Let's continue that, because you studied film. and you're studying the sort of the mechanics of storytelling. Did that have any impact on how you started viewing films and maybe other types of stories as well?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a time, you know, I had a professor in grad school that I'm pretty sure she said you never really like watch the movie unless you saw it three times in a movie theater. I think, you know, what she meant is like that's when you really start getting to like the essence of the movie. And so for me, you know, as much as I, don't get me wrong, like I still, you know, sit in front of my TV or go to the movie theater and just watch and enjoy, right? And get entertained and maybe get, you know, depending what I'm watching. I mean, I definitely have a preference for more like thought-provoking movies and maybe not necessarily just being entertained. But, you know, especially I think like during the time I was in school and right after, I would watch movies a little bit more with a critical eye, and not necessarily in the sense of criticizing the movie, but in the sense of like trying to get to the meaning of what the, you know, whatever the filmmaker's intent was, what the story was trying to tell the audience, which of course, you know, in my career following, even when I left like the film industry, and in particular, I wanted to be, and I did it for like a short time, be a film curator, because for me, it was a lot more about sharing that experience of storytelling, of listening to a story, you know, watching a story. So in a way, it's still like similar to the experience of oral storytelling, right? That's usually very much a communal, I mean, or at least traditionally, maybe I should say, it's a communal experience. And, you know, I do truly believe that our, you know, that our lives are made of stories. They're really sort of like the foundation of it. I mean, even, you know, I go to therapy and, you know, sort of sometimes you hear the stories you tell yourselves, right? That's kind of like also what makes even like your own identity. And so for me, yeah, that was something that I also wanted to share with other people as an experience and help them through, you know, like film curation to look at reality from different aspects.
Tell me more about your time curating film. I'm really interested to hear, were there any themes you were looking at? How did you structure that?
It really depended, honestly. When I worked for film festival, it was more, you know, there was an actual sort of like structured process of, you know, receiving submissions, screening. Like I remember one time, I think I screened 500 shorts in like the matter of maybe a month. And that really, I do think to an extent, like prepared me for my job as a content strategist. But anyway, you know, aside from that, and so it was like, you know, and in my head start kind of like, you know, watching them and of course, like looking for quality and quality, you know, both visual quality, aesthetic quality and quality of the story, how compelling they were, and then start forming these ideas, right? Especially when I was I worked for a couple of years as a film festival programmer in the short programs. And so, yeah, it was kind of like combining by themes, but based on like submissions. But other time it was actually more like me going and sort of like scouting, you know, coming up with some ideas based on my experience, my knowledge, whatever I thought maybe was relevant at the time. And honestly, sometimes it was purely like, I remember at some point I was really interested in animation. And so like stop motion animation. And so I like curated the program of stop motion short films. And another time for a short time, I curated a film program at the Italian Cultural Institute in San Francisco. And for me, that was all about showing, like, I guess with any other culture, there is, you know, there tend to be sort of like stereotypes or things that are like very well known. And, you know, for me, I wanted to bring up stories that were like different, that kind of like broke that mold or showed, you know, things that I personally family that were like really sort of like essential to Italian culture, but that maybe not a lot of people know. Like I remember one time, political satire is something that's like really, really common in Italy. And I don't think a lot of people know also because it wouldn't make a lot of sense. But one of the programs I curated was kind of that, on both like a little bit political satire, but also this idea of like the dark comedy and what like dark comedies are in Italy. So yeah, it was kind of like whatever the inspiration brought to me.
So that act of curation really reminds me of the oral traditions you were speaking earlier. Your father telling stories, right? For example, there's a story that every person who, you know, down the chain who tells that story, they add something from their own context, from their own experience. When you curate a festival, and you say, I'm going to pick these movies because I want people to have a certain reaction or a certain feeling. How much does it matter to you that you're bringing from yourself into it?
I think it matters a lot, actually. And I'm thinking, you know, of course, a part of curating a program is also presenting it at the beginning. So the person, the curator is front and center during that communal experience, right? Like then you're in the theater with the people watching it. Often you invite filmmakers or, you know, other people who work on the movie. Sometimes it may be like the actors who work on the movie. And then you have, you know, the Q&A, which is not always, they're maybe not always super, super interesting, but the whole point is just that, right? Like experience of community in a certain setting. And personally, I still absolutely love going to the movie theater. And I know a lot of people say, oh, it's so much more convenient to watch a movie at home. But for me, I actually kind of like being constrained, you know, because like your focus has to be there and the room is dark and you're with strangers and there is just something different. And for me, magical about being in a movie theater that you can never recreate at home. And, you know, I always also thought, like for me, if I ask someone, what did you think about a movie that you just watched, and they said, oh, it was boring. For me, I don't know, I always think like boring, of course, is a, I don't know, a qualitative like judgment on a movie, but it also, I guess like what I'm trying to say is like there is nothing wrong for me with a movie being boring, because that is part of the experience. And for me, again, stories aren't just for entertainment. And so, you know, it would be very reductive for me to think of a movie or even as a story as just entertainment, because part of that boredom might actually have to do with you sitting with your own thoughts and your own feelings around whatever stories you're being exposed to.
So we definitely know you're a fan of the cinema. What other modes of storytelling are you a fan of?
I am a reader, for sure. I still read. I both read books and also listen to audiobooks. I work for Audible for a little bit, and that's kind of like when, you know, I discovered audiobooks and was hooked right away. I do have preferences a little bit for like the format of, you know, so oftentimes nonfiction I listen to, fiction I read, because I think sometimes fiction, I want that full, again, like focus of having a book in my hand so that my mind can kind of wander and I can imagine. Also, I am a very visual and art person, so I can imagine the things that I'm reading. I live in New York City, so I don't go super often to see live theater, but I do still go, both, you know, Broadway, off-Broadway. I enjoy just really, when it comes to theater, a little bit of everything from musical to avant-garde theater, experimental theater. Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, we could even go stretch it a little bit farther. I, in the past, maybe, I don't know, six, seven years, I got more interested in dance. That was like an art form that And I mean, it's still not something that I would say like I fully understand, but I think that's another way of telling stories through the body that I find really interesting.
Throughout the years of absorbing yourself in these stories, has it awakened any sort of creative outlet for you?
It's funny you say that, because I do think sometimes whatever reason kind of stops me from being the creator. And to be honest, like I haven't explored it too much, but I mean, the reason why, and again, it's not necessarily where I find the most fulfillment. I do think I still find the more fulfillment in enjoying the experience of the story more than like trying to create it. You know, in that creative process, there is, for me, I think, like I said, both the idea of like performing and also the idea of, and performing meaning like, is this going to be successful? Is this going to, you know, feeling like I need to like accomplish something. And so that takes away a little bit from the enjoyment. But at the same time, I have kind of used social media a little bit as a platform for sharing my ideas and venting. And so some of that, you know, becoming the creator and not just the person who experiences someone else's creation has now me sort of like writing on social media a little bit. And I would say mostly that at the moment. I journal at home and that's kind of it. And because, you know, journaling, I think, keeps a very, very low stakes, I think.
In your pursuit of stories, do you have a preference for ones that are more made up, imaginary versus ones that are reality based? Or is that distinction even relevant?
For me personally, I mean, in terms of what I enjoy, it's not. I would say if I looked at it from kind of more of a entertainment, like what entertains me, I say even for nonfiction is what we call, right, like narrative nonfiction, like things like memoirs or bios, you know, real stories that still kind of use a narrative format. But generally speaking, I consume a little bit of everything. I do have sort of like strong like and dislikes when it comes to genres.
Tell me more.
I hardly watch any action movies. Like I said, my preference when it comes to movies is a little bit more thought-provoking, and that can kind of mean anything. But you know, anything that to me just seems like too formulaic sometimes just doesn't translate as entertaining to me or as compelling, I should say. And except, I guess, like my biggest like guilty pleasure / weakness is I watch a lot of like British mysteries. Yeah, that's like they put me to sleep, they relax me, they comfort me. Yeah, I'm just rewatching Agatha Christie's like Miss Marple. I'm a big fan of cozy mysteries. Are kind of a guilty pleasure for me, for sure.
I definitely share that as well. Any recent stories that you've really enjoyed and would love to share with others?
Maybe not recent story, but I have been thinking a little bit, and no, I haven't given it like too much thought, but you know, thinking about the impact that artificial intelligence may have on the creation of stories. And right now, the situation looks a little bleak. And granted, I do think AI can like assist or like help in sparking yeah, creativity and helping craft stories. But, you know, I do wonder what's going to happen. I mean, aside from, you know, all the intellectual property concerns, and not even to mention AI replacing like creators of all evolve forms. Like I said, I don't have a really strong opinion at the moment. I'm still more like watching what's happening and trying to figure out. And not that by any means I think AI would kill stories. Nothing can kill stories. Like I said, they're just part of, I think, the fiber of what we're made. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like what's been on my mind recently.
Where can people find you?
On LinkedIn, for sure. Laura Costantino. Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit less active than usual these days. More sort of like concerned with the real life and work and, you know, trying to, yeah, experience things in real life. I think that's maybe the other thing that I've, you know, given some thought about is like, we're really just kind of like constantly overwhelmed by stories and content, right? Like you open Instagram and really any little like reel is a mini story, right? And especially like the funny ones. And, you know, there is definitely an overwhelming amount of stories we can be exposed to and we can experience. And I do think, you know, to an extent, and this is actually something I've been thinking about around artificial intelligence too, right? Like studying film, you know, studying media. I have a cultural studies background, and for me, I'm thinking, how can we prepare people to experience AI? I mean, even experience, you know, to an extent, the content that people create on social media in a way that isn't fully passive and it's, you know, that it still applies a critical eye. Some of this thought may or may not come out on LinkedIn as I think of that.
Definitely looking forward to reading more on that. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course, yeah, it was a pleasure.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.